Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to BEWR, Busy Women Radio. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation by calling at 646-787-8493. Good evening, good evening. Welcome to tonight's episode of BEWR, Busy Women Radio, where we tackle all things busy women. And I am over the top excited because we have my man, my boo, my hub-dub, Ronnie Jones in the house tonight. How you doing, babe?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic, sweet thing.
Well, I got him straight off the road and right in the studio.
And it's a pleasure to be here today.
Awesome, awesome. So tonight we are going to finish up our roundtable discussion on the one thing. Last week we talked about Martha and how she was so distracted by all the things that she had to do by cooking for Jesus, cleaning the house, and all those things that she was upset because Mary was sitting there at the feet of Jesus and listening to what he had to say. And she was so distracted by all of that she forgot the main thing, which was to be there with Jesus. And, you know, if Martha could do that with Jesus sitting right there in her house, how easy is it for us to be distracted just the same way with all the things that we have going on today? And a lot of times we're distracted by the things that we're doing in the name of Jesus. So tonight we are going to finish up that discussion and just talk about having that accountability person, having that person who can help us to kind of course correct when we get so distracted by those little things that we forget about the main thing. So I'm excited to hear about how this was played out in Martha's life as we listen to another clip from Our Daily Bread. So without any further ado, we'll start the clip.
How well do you take correction? That's a tough question, isn't it? Because I don't think anyone would say they like being corrected. But if we go through life resisting the coaching that we get, that doesn't turn out well. Someone once said that uncoachable kids become unemployable adults. And so let your kids get used to having someone be tough on them. It's life. That's pretty good parenting advice. It's pretty good advice for all of us to be humble enough to listen to coaching. Well, today on Discover the Word, we're going to continue our look at a woman that we find in the Gospels who was a good friend of Jesus. And yesterday we saw that she received some coaching. She received some correction from Jesus. And so how did she take that correction? Was she coachable? Let's find out in today's conversation on Discover the Word. And welcome to Discover the Word, the weekday small group Bible study from Our Daily Bread Ministries. Misunderstanding Martha. That's the name of the series Bill Crowder is leading this week with Marty Hahn and Lisa Morgan. And yesterday, we talked about what for her could have been a defining moment, and in a sense, may have been. But I think Bill wants us to consider whether maybe what we'll talk about today is actually more of a defining moment. Yesterday, she did something that needed to be corrected by Jesus. And so how did she respond to that coaching? Was she coachable? And should that define her more in our eyes? I think you're going to enjoy and be challenged by being part of the group today. And so why don't you pull your chair in close with Mart and Elisa and Bill as they continue to explore how we think about this woman named Martha and take us to another incident in her life that suggests that maybe we have a flawed overall perception of her. We misunderstand Martha.
Is there anything more uncomfortable and awkward than being publicly corrected? Or maybe put it another way, being in a position of having to publicly correct someone.
Yeah.
I think it all depends on the nature of the correction, how it's done, the spirit in which it's done, what's at stake. I think there's a whole lot of issues.
Yeah, and private mistakes really aren't that much better, honestly.
No.
Because you still are living with them.
Right.
No, but being corrected with an audience carries a certain not niceness to it.
No, especially if it's a very serious issue.
Yeah.
It's one thing if the mistake is unintentional or minor. It's another issue if the mistake is huge and it's been covered up and it's done a lot of damage to people.
When I think about being publicly corrected, I think of it on two levels. One, I think you're walking through the grocery store and you hear this frazzled parent. It doesn't matter whether it's a mom or a dad. And the parents are just ripping them. And it's just so uncomfortable to see that child being taken apart like that publicly. The other thing I think about is coaching. How frustrated I get, like if I'm watching a college football game and a guy makes a mistake on the field and he comes off and the camera shows the coach talking to him and the kid won't look at him. Like, you
can
say what you want, but I'm not going to listen.
Yeah. A lot of times the coaches are over the top. I become a little impatient with coaches that act like little boys or little girls.
That's
not
fun to watch.
No, it's not fun to watch.
Very uncomfortable. Yeah.
Well, in our last episode.
It's not where you wanted to go, is
it? Well, it's kind of where we wanted to pick up where we left off, because in our last episode, we saw this uncomfortable, in a sense, moment where someone was publicly corrected. Martha was publicly corrected by Jesus in front of this room of people.
And kind of compared to her sister in the process.
How many of you like to hear that?
Mm-hmm.
And so the question is, how did Martha respond?
I don't know, but you just got a lot of people's attention. We said, why can't you be like your sister? Why can't you be like your brother?
Yeah. But when we look at Martha and we say, that's the defining moment. That's all we have of her life. Well, no, it's not. Because I would like to suggest that we get some evidence, perhaps, of how she responded to that correction. In the opening part of John 11, Jesus gets word that his friend Lazarus has fallen ill. He intentionally stays behind and doesn't go to him until after Lazarus has died from this obviously severe illness. And when he comes to Bethany, he's going to have an interaction with Martha and an interaction with Mary. And what I would like to propose is that his interaction with Martha shows how she took his correction in Luke chapter 10. Now, that's my theory. I want you to help me either prove it or disprove it.
Sometime later.
Yeah, this is sometime later, maybe a year and a half later, we think, perhaps. So let's go to John 11, and beginning in verse 17, for this part of it, let's read all the way to verse 22. Mark, you want to start?
When Jesus arrived at Bethany, he was told that Lazarus had already been in his grave for 4 days.
Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them of the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home.
Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if only you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that God will give you whatever you ask.
Okay, let's stop right there for now. Jesus comes at long last. Lazarus has been in the grave 4 days.
Right.
Okay.
And Jesus could have come earlier.
He could have come, and he didn't come. Even
always
though,
been hard for me to
even
understand.
Though we saw on Monday that Jesus loved Martha and Mary and Lazarus. He loved them, but he didn't come. This is tough.
But in the moment, you're wondering why.
Yeah.
And it's in my mind that John, the narrator, maybe that's why he includes that little statement. Now, don't forget, Jesus really does love these people.
Yeah, you know? That's a good point.
He really does love them because, you know, it doesn't look like he loves them, but he really does. Now, when Martha comes to Jesus, what are the first words out of her mouth? Read verse 21 again, Elisa.
Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died.
Okay, now, later in the story, if you drop down to verse 32, Martha goes back and gets Mary and says, Mary, Jesus is here. Mart, in verse 32, what does Mary say?
Okay, Mary arrives. She sees Jesus. She falls at his feet and says, Lord, if only you had been here, my brother would not have died.
Okay. Can you imagine how many times in these last 4 days they've said this to each other? Where was Jesus when we needed him? Why wasn't he here? If only he'd have come, Lazarus would still be alive. I mean, you hear such despair, don't you?
Yes.
I imagine over those 4 days, these two grieving sisters just constantly saying, I thought he loved us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm wondering whether they were angry. Wouldn't you have been angry? I would have been angry, yeah, I think, angry. Knowing that he could have made a difference.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's also interesting, just a little tiny feature. When we saw Mary in Luke 10, where was she?
At his feet.
When she comes to Jesus in verse 32 of John 11, where is she?
At his feet.
We're going to see her again in John 12. Guess where she's going to be?
At his feet.
Every time we see Mary, she's at Jesus' feet, which is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But here she says, as she falls at his feet, Lord, if you'd have been here, my brother wouldn't have died. The exact same words that Martha had said earlier. However, Martha didn't stop there. I want you to go back again, Elisa, and read verse 21, but then carry on into verse 22.
Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now, God will give you whatever you ask.
You know, that's Martha, right?
That's Martha.
Yeah. I don't want to put Mary down in order to lift Martha up. But Mary's statement is a very closed statement. It's over. He's dead. Mm-hmm. You're too late. You could have helped. You didn't. There's hope in Martha's statement. It sounds like a statement of despair until she turns the corner and brings hope into the equation. But I know.
Even now.
Even now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not over with.
It's not too late.
It's not too late. And why is it not too late?
God will give you whatever you ask.
So there's a recognition of who Jesus truly is by Martha.
Now, the fact that she comes to him and she honestly expresses herself just like she did in Luke 10. I mean, she's not pulling her punches. If you'd been here, you wouldn't have died.
Tell my sister to help me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's still being right out there. She's still being Martha.
Mm-hmm.
But she also speaks in this statement of hopeful faith in what Jesus still yet has available to him. And I wonder if maybe that gives us a hint as to how she responded to that public correction. Because if somebody had scolded you publicly, in a sense,
you wouldn't forget it, would you?
You wouldn't forget it. And you wouldn't necessarily feel warmly or positively toward that person unless you got the message and took it to heart.
Now, if she took it to heart, what would that mean?
Maybe what it means, again, the scriptures don't tell us because she doesn't appear between Luke 10 and John 11. But what I'm suggesting is that maybe what it means is that she took the point of it and started spending some time at Jesus' feet with Mary.
That's exactly what I'm thinking, because how did she come to know that even now God would give Jesus whatever he asked by sitting at his feet as well, by being there herself, by being a student with him and of him?
Don't you get the sense that between Luke 10 and John 11, there were some other teaching times where she said, you know what, the meal can wait. The meal can wait.
Or one dish would be enough.
Yeah, maybe one dish, like Haddon said, one dish would be enough. I don't have to put on the whole feast. One dish would be enough. But between Luke 10 and John 11, she's been sitting at Mary's side. She's been learning at the Master's feet. And her own relationship with him has been growing. And her own understanding of him is being enlarged.
And maybe as she does, maybe we see evidence here that the Spirit of God responds to that and begins to give her a confidence and give her a faith. Because I don't think we have to think this is all up to Martha or Mary or us, right?
Just a few verses later, and I'm sure we'll unpack this more, she refers to Jesus when she goes to Mary. She says, the teacher is here, which really underlines it. You know, he's turned into the teacher to her, and it's capitalized. He's turned into her rabbi. This is Martha. He's turned into her rabbi as well at his invitation.
That's good.
I think what we're seeing is someone who maybe has been given grace to learn from her mistakes and to move forward and to maybe do better. Pulled there by the Spirit, pulled there by the undeniable love of Jesus. And the mistake that seemed to be so defining for her in Luke chapter 10, all of a sudden becomes secondary to who Jesus is and his relationship to the Father in this moment of grief and loss, which is so much more important than that meal that seemed to matter so much in Luke chapter 10.
Faced with this personal pain, Martha could have responded in a number of ways, but she chose to come to Jesus. And as a result, we have evidence that her faith grew stronger.
Well, I think that clip was very telling of how we should approach being course corrected. And, you know, a lot of times Jesus will, you know, he'll lovingly give us little nudges of course correction in the beginning. But, you know, if we don't pay attention, he allows things and people to get more public, a little ugly at times. You know, you have any thoughts on that, Mr. Jones?
Yeah, we don't need to fall down on our feet when we go to Jesus anyway, you know.
Mm-hmm. And like Mary, you know, Mary knew the important thing, which was to be in the presence of Jesus. And I think being in the presence of Jesus gives you that confidence and that ability to hear from him more quickly. You know, see, it looks like we have Doris on the line. Doris, are you there?
I'm here, Kendra.
Do you have anything to add?
Well, I do have something to add. I just want to just think about Martha for a second. The commentators wanted to make it seem as if that one talk that Jesus had to Martha made her listen a little bit more. But I think it's possible that she had been listening in the past. It may have just been that one time where she was really upset about the fact that Mary wasn't helping. But I don't I don't think she just all of a sudden started listening. I don't think that having Jesus in her life would have had little impact upon her to the point where he had to have a talk with her first. I think just the fact that he was who he was made it possible that he was already important to her. It's just that on that one occasion, and that happens sometimes, it can be, you know, how that you can be really good all this time, and then one time you have one fault, and that's all that is brought up. But the other good things that you had done are forgotten about. So I would like to believe that Martha was intrinsically good. It's just that that one time Jesus used what she said as a teachable moment to make a point that you should make the main thing the main thing. But I also think that Martha, even before then, had known that. She just needed a reminder, and that's what it is sometimes. It's not that we don't know the right thing to do as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
It's that there are times when we make an action may seem as if we don't know, but we know, but we need that reminder. So I think that she knew what was important. It's just that Jesus used that as a time to show that, you know, that we need to be thinking about that all the time, but not that she didn't know that it wasn't important. Am I making any sense?
You are. You're making sense. Yeah, like, and I agree with you there. I think that story was put in there so that to highlight the importance of not getting so caught up in doing things that you're missing the presence of God.
Mm-hmm.
And not to make the point that Martha, you know, was always putting Jesus on the back burner, so to speak, but just like you said, using it as a teachable moment.
Right.
So, yeah, I get what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. We have Shannon on the line. Let's bring her in. Are you there, Shannon?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. All right. How's everyone doing?
Hey there, Shannon.
All right. How about you?
I'm sorry. Hi, Ronnie. I didn't speak to you either.
Go ahead, Ronnie.
Hey, how y'all doing?
So, hi, how you doing?
Yeah. So, do you have something to add, Shannon?
Yeah, I was thinking about how what you just said, how she was like so focused on, you know, preparing the meal and everything. But I think it was also think that the story was put in the Bible because of like as humans, we are so unfocused and distracted on things that we think really, really matter, but really don't.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, like how she was so focused on trying to prepare this big meal and everything, but what was important was for her to sit down and listen and to be focused on what Jesus was trying to tell her. So I think we get so focused a lot of times in the process of where we're trying to go, because she's probably trying to fix the meal so that she can sit down and listen to him. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's better to just hurry, to just, you know, put things to the side and really just focus.
Yeah. Right.
That's right.
And we do it all the time. I mean, especially even as parents, I mean, we do that, you know, for the sake of taking care of our children. What do? We take on, you know, 2 and 3 jobs at times. We don't have to see our kids.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And then the focus should be the children. But for the sake of taking care of our children, we're almost neglectful, you know, doing things that we think they need done, you know, going out, taking on several jobs so that we can buy them things or provide them with, you know, nicer houses and things like that. And that's not really what's important. I mean, it is important, but it's not the main thing. The main thing is that time. And, you know, and I like that actually her interaction in the Bible, with Jesus in the Bible was kind of progressive, where in the beginning she was very distracted and she couldn't stop doing for Jesus so that she could sit and listen to Jesus. But then later, she needed Jesus, but he was busy, but she knew to go right to him. Yeah, and I just think that that's just so telling how we can easily be distracted by Jesus, by things that need to be done. But if Jesus or, you know, God is not instantaneous in answering our prayers or preventing things from happening, we're wondering, well, where is he? I think that was a very human thing there.
Right, that's true. And I think also the fact that, and another way Jesus shows us how we should conduct ourselves, is when both of the women told him, basically asking where you were, basically attacking him, he took the high road. He didn't say, well, what do you think? I can't just drop everything I'm doing. He dealt with them calmly. You know, he didn't rise to their level of irritation like we would have done. You know, we would have been just irate and just probably not even speaking to the person if that person hadn't been able to get there to help us when we wanted them to. So there again, I think he showed us how we are supposed to conduct ourselves.
Right. And, you know, at the beginning, they were talking about being coachable and being teachable. And, you know, I believe that Martha showed us that, you know, just because someone corrects you does not mean that they are, putting you down, or, you know, you don't necessarily have to distance yourself from that person. You know, quite the opposite. You need to, sometimes, you know, that's the person that you need to lean on. You know, so, you know, I think a lot of people, when they do receive that course correction, or sometimes we shy away from being coached or, you know, having somebody to kind of guide us on our path, because we feel like, you know, we don't want to deal with that correction. But you'll be corrected, you know, either by God, you know, or in person with, you know, people who aren't as gentle as Jesus.
That's true. That's definitely true. But it is difficult to be corrected publicly, you know. You know, you think if there's an audience, and sometimes I can, like the man was talking about, the parent that was correcting the child in the supermarket or wherever they were. I've been guilty of that, and I wasn't even thinking about the fact that I may be creating a distraction here by correcting my child. I was thinking about the fact that I need to remind this child of his home training or her home training. So sometimes we are not really cognizant of the fact that we are being a distraction and embarrassing this child, because we're thinking about how we've been embarrassed because this child is misbehaving. So it's hindsight, of course, is always 20/20. It is better to wait until you get into the car. But sometimes it's just, you know, we are, as parents, we got all these other things on our minds. right now we need to deal with this situation. So it may not be the best thing to do, but that's what we do because we're human and we're trying to get our point across before we forget it, too. But sometimes we it's hard to think in that moment of what the right thing, the best thing is to do. You're wanting to correct this child who has misbehaved. But if you take a moment to sit back, what you can do later, you can say, well, that may not have been the best thing to do. But it just depends on what's all going on in your head at that time as to how you react to that situation.
And somebody may have said.
Go ahead.
Somebody may have already mentioned how sometimes we receive corrections for something later. And, you know, Jesus may have corrected her because at first she wasn't focused on him. She was just focused on other things. But when Lazarus died, it forced her to focus on him. You know, she wasn't focused on, oh, my brother died, what can I do? You know, it wasn't, it was no longer about, you know, her and what she was trying to do. It became, he became her focus. So, maybe, you know, he was doing that to say, you know, all these other things around don't matter. Your relationship with me matters because later on, when you're, you know, when, you know, he probably knew what was coming, you know, and that was just his way of letting her know that, you know, keep your focus on me and not on other things.
Right.
And, you know, and that's why I think that, you know, in the beginning, God gives us those gentle nudges back to the right course. And when we don't pay attention, he, you know, allows things to get a little more difficult for us. So who's to say that he didn't have to have this conversation with Martha on several occasions? You know, that's just like when you are correcting your child. You know, when you're in the store, you know, they may pick up something. You say, put it down. You know, you say it gently. They pick up something else. You may tap their hand. You know, I say it, stop it. But then it escalates because they're not taking those gentle nudgings to say, stop meddling, to the point that you have to correct them publicly. You know, that can get a bit embarrassing for the child, but, you know, you have tried to get them back on track gently. They just weren't listening. And we as adults do that all the time. You know, God gives us those little signs that, you know, you're going off track. But it's not, sometimes it's not until things completely fall apart or we just have a major crisis that we realize that God was trying to get our attention and tell us we were, you know, in a sense misbehaving, you know, the whole time. And that's when that public criticism, that public correction comes. And it's quite embarrassing, but it's necessary.
It is. Right. That's true. That's true. Exactly right.
So, I think that's where being coachable comes in, because if you can take that correction in the beginning, and if you can take those instructions in the beginning on how to conduct yourself, you know, and it can be in anything, in how to deal with your finances, how to handle your children, how to manage your time. If you can take those little bits of instructions and things like that, and a lot of times it's from people who are skilled in those areas, then you won't come up against the wall later on, you know, in as many instances. Of course, we'll always have troubles and tribulations, but it won't be as dramatic, and you won't have such a public humiliation if you take, you know, advantage of those that instruction in the beginning.
And I think, I think sometimes there are people who just won't, like the Bible say, endure sound instruction. There are some people who feel like they know what to do. They don't have to listen to God or to anybody because they got it. They know what they need to do. And so they're not listening to anybody but themselves. And it takes a few knockdowns for them to realize that they aren't the answer. They're not the ultimate answer to or whatever question they may have. God is the answer. But sometimes their arrogance keeps them from responding like they should. because they feel like they got it all covered. They can take care of everything. And we see that in too many instances where people feel that they, when they do things, they do it themselves. They don't give God the credit for it. And so it mm-hmm. takes a little bit more knockdown for them to realize that they have to listen to what God has to say. He has to be a big part of their lives.
That's so true. Mm-hmm. Were you going to say something, Shannon?
I'd like to say that was true. That's true.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Ronnie, you've been a baseball coach many times, so you know firsthand how it is when the players, they won't take the instruction during practice. So what tends to happen?
They do their own thing. and the parents don't keep them in line. So, you know, when I do it, I try to do it calmly because it's not my child, you know, and they just keep doing their own thing.
Mm-hmm. And so, but what happens during the game? I think that's where the biggest problem that I've seen happen, you know, because I've been at the practices and then I've seen the games, you know. So what happens to the child during the game when they aren't following instructions during practice?
Same thing. They just they catch on, you know, when the ball's moving, they catch it. It's like they pay attention to the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Like if it goes to the left, all the kids on the right and in the middle, they go to the left.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of funny to see, but you got to see it. If it goes to the right, of course, the same thing. But they finally get it, you know, when the season's about to end, then they finally get it.
Mm-hmm.
They start doing what they're supposed to do.
But in the meantime, they're embarrassed and everything. Because I know I've seen several little boys, my son included, that, you know, during practice, you know, the coach would tell them, don't try to hit a home run every time. You know, the goal needs to be to hit the ball. Well, they get up to the plate because they're not listening during practice. They get up to the plate during the game, and they're trying to hit a home run. And what happens? They miss. You know, they strike out, and then they're embarrassed. So, you know, I think sometimes, you know, and like you said, toward the end of the season, they start to get it. They start to realize, I just need to hit the ball. And if I'm lucky, I'll hit a home run. And, you know, that's how it should be with us, too. If we follow the instruction, yeah, we will hit those home runs, but the main thing is to follow those instructions. Are we going to say something?
Were there times when they were benched because they didn't follow instructions, were they out just allowed to play?
They was all allowed to play, but you know, the snacks, when it came to snacks, you know, they get certain snacks, you know. They get in line. They be the last one to get the snacks.
Okay. So there were times when they were put at the end of the line because they weren't following instructions.
Yeah, they did receive correction.
Okay.
Yeah, but you know, I think a lot of it just has to do with being able to receive those instructions, you know, in the beginning. And God is always talking to us, always.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think it's a coincidence that there are so many people going into the coaching field now, because I think a lot of people are, you know, setting out to do their own thing. They're stepping away from full-time jobs where they are you know, told everything to do step by step. And when you're stepping out there on your own, you actually need more, you know, coaching and instruction, because you don't have anybody giving you that step by step instruction. You know?
Right. So
are we
going to
say something more?
No, I'm just saying that's true. That is true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think we about covered everything on that topic today. What y'all think?
I tend to agree with you. I think because we did discuss it on last week, we covered some of the major points. So
yeah.
I think we've covered everything that we need to cover.
Yeah, I think so too. Let me see if Shannon has anything before we close out. Shannon, do you have anything to add before we close out?
No.
All right. Well, I guess we're going to go on close out tonight's show. Join us on Tuesday, the 13th. We will have our resident queen, Uju Aniagu, on, and she will be talking to us about the power of perspective. So everybody make sure you tune in to BEWR on Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern and 6 p.m. Central. And with that, I bid everybody good night.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.
You're listening to BEWR, Busy Women Radio. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation by calling at 646-787-8493.